Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Warius.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet.
What a time to be alive!
Thank you, Wes. This is going to be the official show for the month of February 2022. And on the official show, we're going to talk about a bit of news as well as new releases and take a look into March and see what's coming out then. Just today, as we are recording, there was a surprise, not really too big of a surprise. They announced like 2 days ago, but like a Pokemon Presents thing.
Are we doing that first or?
We do have a dedicated Pokemon show.
I think we should bury that content for another week.
Okay.
Right, because we're going to probably do it next week, right?
I think we should, with Pokemon shows next week. We'll get more into the nuance, but I think we should at least acknowledge that this happened. Gen 9 was announced, and as they were showing the trailer, I was looking at it, I was like, please, God, 2023, and they were like, end of 2020, just like, oh, fuck me.
That's great. I love it. Okay. I'm happy about it.
It's fucking great. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to be playing nothing but Pokemon the entire year.
It's my money, man. It's a good place to be, honestly. We finally
have content for the book show.
We'll go in depth on it, I'm sure. But one of them is a crocodile, and there haven't been crocodiles in Spain for like 6 million years.
Which one's a crocodile?
The middle starter. There's like a fire starter.
The fire's
like
a crocodile?
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Is it supposed to be set in Spain?
Yes, it's okay. On, yeah.
With the windmills?
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Because
Don Quixote. That's what they were gonna say.
Yeah, Cervantes
is gonna be Don Quixote. They're probably gonna have the. Let's save the content.
Yeah,
this is ace content.
Because now that I know that it's set in Spain, that opens up a ton of cool possibilities. But yeah, that's gonna be great. They also talked about, and maybe we'll get into the nuance of some of the other stuff.
We're gonna get another bull Pokemon.
Another what?
Bull.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, I hope not. It's horrible what they do to those poor bulls.
Sure, we talked about that on a different show, how they give them that taste of freedom and then kill them.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like we should do that with our inmates, like on death row. Just give them a brief taste of freedom, then...
Yeah.
I mean...
Running with the inmates?
We can have a discussion about the morality of a capital punishment system, but if you just want to have fun with it, well, we got it.
Yeah. I think we joked about this a while ago, if we were like, if Wes was an assassin, he would like wake him up first before he shot them.
Hi, how are you doing? Bang.
No one dies in their sleep.
No, those are his rules. No women, no kids, no dying in your sleep. Yes.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah, you're 100% true.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on with this month? We already had a Nintendo Direct. We discussed that already. So we don't really have any major game announcements to talk about.
There's so much shit happening though right now.
But yeah, there's so
Ben
much...
Simmons is playing basketball. Kyrie Irving will be playing basketball.
James Harden is living up to expectations.
James Harden is amazing. And Ukraine is holding off the Russians.
Right.
Wow.
Cats and dogs living together.
There was a Nintendo Direct where they announced a whole bunch of stuff, including a Mario soccer game and soccer in quotes, and they announced Pokemon Gen 9. What the hell is this month? It was great.
Wow.
And
it's the shortest month of the year too, man.
Right.
Too much shit's happened this month.
Is it true that James Harden has a $60 million a year contract?
That sounds about right, yeah.
I was listening to a baseball podcast, and they were talking about salary caps and all of like these financial issues surrounding the labor agreement that hasn't happened yet. And doing a comparison of baseball salaries to other sports, and somebody was talking about ranting about how James Harden makes $60 million a year, and the highest paid baseball player makes $43 million a year. When that happened, everyone was blown away. By that,
but
that
baseball's
annual value.
Got a roster of like 28 guys and a bullpen system that they have to farm.
Hmm.
Like, you got 12 guys on a basketball. You got 12 to 15 guys on a basketball
team. But they also have a hard salary cap, don't
they?
And they
have a hard salary cap. James Harden makes as much money he does because that's the weighted value he adds to the team.
Hmm.
You know, they pay him, you know, you couldn't pay six guys $10 million and have a better, like, have them combined have a better impact to a team than a James Harden.
I defy someone to try, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, neither here nor there.
I mean, because there's only... What is the math on it? It's 48 times... There's only like 240 minutes of playing time in a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get six guys and play them all 30 minutes. That just doesn't work.
Not with that attitude.
And then having a full team. It's like, yeah. When the playoffs roll.
If the Dallas Cowboys have taught us anything, it's that the game isn't over when the clock runs out. You keep going.
Oh, man. That's so funny.
So now we're mixing sports. So speaking of sports, Nintendo sold a lot of Switches.
Sure did.
With everything else happening in February, they also released... This was at the beginning of the month. It feels like a fucking year ago now. They did their quarter three results, which would be like the end months of 2021. So up until December 31st. So, and just like the quick highlights off of that, Switch hardware total is past 100 million, 103.54 million. They sold almost 19 million in the three quarters of 2021. Their fiscal year is going to end in March, so they'll almost certainly break 20 million there, which is very good. They broke it down by different units, the OLED and the Lite. The standard Switch is still leading the pack, though. And they sold, so far on Switch, 766 million units of software, so making quite a bit of money there.
If they could just come out with more OLEDs, they'd do real good on the OLEDs. Those will go quick.
Hmm.
They just got to get them in the stores.
Yeah, it's true. And I wonder, and we'll never know for sure, but I wonder how like their sort of production line breaks down, because I doubt they make as many lights or OLEDs as they do standard Switches.
Oh, yeah, there's no way they do.
So I wonder how the sales would break down. Like, if everything were even, if the sales would even out, or if there's just still a higher demand for the standard model over the other ones. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, most people that I talk to would probably just spend the extra $50.
Hmm.
But, I mean, it really comes down to if you're primarily TV or handheld.
Yeah. Yeah, and also availability is probably a big factor, too.
Oh, yeah.
If OLED isn't available and someone just really needs a Switch, guess what they're going to do? They're just going to go with what they can get.
Oh, yeah.
But they also updated their list of million sellers. Mario Kart 8 still leading the pack with over 43 million units sold, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Mario Kart 8s. Animal Crossing coming in second with 37.5 million units. Smash Bros. Is over 27 million. Breath of the Wild over 25 million. Pokemon Sword and Shield, Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Party, Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, kind of rounding out the top 10 there.
I'm surprised they got that much.
Which ones?
Diamond Pearl.
Yeah.
Pretty surprised. Yeah.
Almost 14 million, but like since November.
And
That's crazy.
It's weird because I purchased every single one of these games except Mario Kart, the number one. I was proud of myself for having hit every single major game that's come out,
mm-hmm.
including Ring Fit Adventure.
I got Ring Fit too.
Yeah.
Is it going to get me in shape?
I mean,
if you do it consistently, yeah.
You are going to get you in shape. It can help. It does a pretty good job of like gamifying exercise, but you know, you're going to get out what you put in.
Right.
That's fair.
You got to, and again, it's routines. It's routines and habits. You got to make sure it's a thing you do daily or at least five times a week.
Oh, I'll be dead within the decade.
We can only hope. So, I mean, I don't really want to go down the entire list here. There's no real big surprises. Like, all of the big games you expect to be there are there. I was, I think, like, the first surprise that I ran into was Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity moved 4 million units, which is insane.
Yeah.
Good for them. I was real happy to see Fire Emblem Three Houses on the list. They've almost hit 3 million. Metroid Dread, 2.75 million-ish. A Tropical Freeze, over 2.5 million, which is great. Like, I'm was more interested in like the bottom of the list than I was at the top of the list, because I know those top of the list games are going to continue to sell. West, Pokemon Snap, over 2.3 million.
Which is very that's good. Not bad.
That's very good.
Very good. I'm fine. Some of these have like really surprisingly low numbers. Like, for as much as we talk about them, like, it's kind of crazy to think that, like...
Are you talking about Xenoblade?
Fire Emblem only didn't even sell 3 million copies, like...
I think there's a sort of twisted perspective.
Octopath Travelers sold barely 2 million.
Yeah, but no, they're still making money on doing that. I mean, that's worth it still for them to do that.
And I think...
Those are pretty niche. I want to say niche, but that's a very smaller market than one, like, fucking Mario Kart. I mean...
And when you're thinking about... comparing like to mega hits. It's not really a super fair comparison to say like, oh, Mario Kart sells 43 million copies.
It's also an all ages game. Like a lot of these games at the top are all ages games, right? Mm-hmm. It's like if you're going to be playing Astral Chain, you probably like your in depth RPGs.
Astral Chain wasn't going to do well no matter what. But
when you're making a game with a smaller scope, or I suppose like a double A sort of a budget to it, like a Fire Emblem, or an Age of Calamity, or a even like Xenoblade Chronicles to an extent, but like when a game sells a million, unless it's like the annualized mega triple A franchise, like a Call of Duty or a Battlefield, something like that, you're not. It's that question of scope. Like they're getting out much more than what they put into it. Because they don't have these super inflated budgets where they have teams working around the clock around the world to make the newest Assassin's Creed. There are some games that need to sell 5 and 6 and 7 million copies in order to break even. These games don't need to do that. So rather than having like these mega franchises that they have to be annualized in order to keep the wheels turning, they can have these games that are smaller in scope that are able to turn around quicker. Like we're about to get the second and a half, third Xenoblade game in the lifespan of this system so far. It's impressive that they're able to churn them out that quickly.
Yeah.
We're going to be playing the 8th Pokemon game this year by November, December. I don't know. It feels like we've played 8 of them so far. Like they're moving these things super quickly.
Hey, we just got Pearl and then Arceus, and now we end of this year we're going to get fucking...
Scarlet and Violet.
What are you thinking, November?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of like their target date.
Yeah.
But what's that going to... Because Xenoblade is in September, and admittedly, Xenoblade is not going to move 10 million units. Definitely not. I think they would be super pleased if Xenoblade 3 moves 3 or 4 million. I think that would be very impressive now that they have the bigger install base. Are they going to launch Zelda and Pokemon at the end of the year? Holy shit.
Oh shit, I forgot Zelda was coming out this year.
They're aiming for 2022.
They're aiming.
They've said 2022. They always put that caveat to we're aiming for 2022. So there is the possibility that they're saying, darn it, guys, we missed it.
Which, I mean, I kind of wish they would just take a Zelda approach on this Pokemon game. Like, calm down a little bit. Give it a little bit of time in the oven. We've been waiting so long for this Breath of the Wild 2, but you're shoving another Pokemon down our throat. I mean, calm down for a second.
I mean, here's the thing, though. These are three very different games. Sure. The Venn diagram, you know, has guys like you that want to play all three, but I think most people, myself included, would probably just pick up two of them and be happy with it. You know?
Two of what?
Those three games.
Xenoblade, Pokemon, Zelda.
Oh.
Like, you have one that's an action RPG, you've got one that's a hard-boiled JRPG, and then you've got Pokemon, which is love.
RPG.
Love in video game form.
It's a warm hug.
Me and Wes are just going to be like contacting our Coke dealers just to try to fucking stay awake to get through all these things.
And honestly, if it is like the release schedule is like September, October, November, then it won't feel so bad. You'll have 90 days to work through three games.
I thank God that there's games like Elden Ring that came out this early in the year, because if this was coming out near the end of the year with the other ones, I just hate everything. Just... Mm-hmm. Well, guys, I'll see you in a few months.
And Ryan, to your point, Xenoblade 2 took me 200 hours.
Yeah.
I'm not burning through that. I mean, I could burn through that in 90 days. I don't want to. Mm-hmm.
You have a family, John.
I know, right?
Think of the kids.
Well, it's like, if you want to put 200 hours into it, I mean, it's the sort of thing that you'd want to do over the course of months.
Hmm.
It's not like you want to sit there and churn it. So I feel like that would probably be a game you can kind of come back to.
Sure.
It's not like a Twitch game where you need to like memorize inputs. Like I know when I would step away from Breath of the Wild for a while, I would need a solid hour just to get comfortable with the controls again. Mm. When it's like a, you know, it's a JRPG and you're just doing decision makings and menus and stuff like that, it's, you know.
There's a sort of I can't speak to what the Xenoblade 3 battle system is going to be like. True. But Xenoblade 2... there was like some timing elements to it, to when you were like executing attacks and which ones you were on the clock to in order to pick the next thing a lot of times. But
I'll gladly revisit what I perceived as the issues of Xenoblade Chronicles battle system. But we don't have to.
Well, the Xenoblade Chronicles one, it's a very different battle system from 1 and 2.
They got rid of the quick time events is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
good.
Yeah, they did.
That is a great place to start. And there's no auto battling, right?
Not to the same extent.
It is, and I'll... Yeah, like, they're going to auto-attack, but you're using abilities in certain points.
There are times where you're going to want to interrupt the auto-attacks in order to do your own thing. There are going to be times where you want to let the auto-attacks build up in order to make the next skill even better.
Okey-doke.
Neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good.
Oh, yeah, Xenoblade 2 is really good.
What do we got to do to get you to play 2?
No. Because I had to sit through 45 minutes gripping my chair, listening to him trash Xenoblade 1. Yeah. Don't you do this.
And this is why I wanted to do it again, because it was hilarious.
Are the
voice actors British?
They are.
They are. They're always give British. Give me a copy.
They do this thing.
Not as British, but they are British.
Oh, no, it's
it's a different kind of British.
Right.
I don't know what... in Britain it is.
What they do is there's different factions in the game, and that has to do with what region of the game that they're from. And some of them are Scottish, and some of them are British, and some of them are Welsh. Some of them are, like, British, but from, like, the north of England.
Mm-hmm. I can't tell the difference.
Does that make me racist?
I don't know, maybe. This is just casual racism.
Xenophobic, certainly.
No, the Gormati, the Cadir people, they're Welsh.
Oh.
And the Empire, like the Moradain,
they're
Scottish.
They're Scottish.
Yeah.
Which
is funny because they're like the sort of, they're not like oppressors, but like the dominant force. They're the most powerful, and it's the Scottish ones, not like the English ones. It's kind of a fun role reversal.
There's no Ryan time.
Oh, I just like the idea. I did just like the idea that the British people were the ones to make it to space. That was it. it's all a fucking computer game. Because that's what I remember them doing is like they cut to this scene on a spaceship where they're talking about like how the computer is overheating because these jerks in the game don't realize they're in a game and they're like, nah, we're just gonna fucking do it. We're just gonna melt this motherboard and just die. You know? And I was like, wow.
That game is wild.
It really is.
So,
you're gonna love 2.
Maybe I'll skip to 3. We'll do a point counterpoint.
New releases. We have some new release games to go through here.
What?
Ollie Ollie World was out on February 8th, as well as Retro Bowl. Retro Bowl is this funny looking, it looks like Tecmo Bowl, and I think they are trying to emulate Tecmo Bowl, but it's like 8-bit football, which is definitely more my speed when it comes to sports games. I really don't play a whole lot of them. Eglia Rebirth, we talked a little bit about when we previewed that one. The first game that I actually indulged in, this one's called Ocean's Heart. And Ocean's Heart, Wes, I think you saw a little bit of it when you were here the other day.
Okay.
I really liked it. I really ended up digging this one. It's made by one guy. And I actually got exchanged a few Twitter messages with him.
Oh, wow.
I jumped on Twitter for the first time in fucking years because I was at this point of the game. There comes a point in the game. We'll get to the high-low view of it in a second here. But there's a point in the game where... It uses a lot of like the Zelda beats. And in Breath of the Wild, there's Eventide Island. I think that this particular part of Ocean's Heart is more akin to the Tokay Island in Oracle of Ages, where, you know, you go, you end up in this place, and you're stripped of all of your items.
Yeah.
And you have to go through this process of working way around this puzzle to get all your stuff back.
So it's kind of like a Metroid thing.
Yeah,
I'm so powered, and then I'm not allowed to use my big gun.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to watch this thing murder me, but I'm not allowed to use my big gun.
Yeah, you just got to get permission to use your fucking heat shield, because it might blow up the station if you just are impervious to flames. Anyway.
That was such a weird premise.
Other M's a weird game.
Yeah, that was an odd one.
But, so you wash up on this island, and it's... The designer really paid a lot of attention to the sort of environments that you find yourself in. It feels like a very organic world, much in the same way of like Breath of the Wild. Everything feels like it proceeds naturally to the next area. It's not like broken off to where, okay, now you have a screen pole, now you're in the swamp. And then if you go in the other direction, there's a screen pole, and now you're in a mountainous area. It's a much more like even flowing terrain. But you end up in this place, and unlike like Eventide Island or the Tokay Island in Oracle of Ages, there is like a town. There are people you can interact with, and there are NPCs that will like give you hints about where you can go to find stuff. But similar to Link's, Link's Awakening, A Link to the Past. There are optional items, stuff that as you explore different parts of the game, you will come across something like a boomerang. A boomerang was not an item that I don't think I found it in a main dungeon, but I was on the island where everything is taken away. You have to find everything, and I was certain I had gone everywhere on this island and found, like, retrieved all my stuff. But when I got to the end, I was like, okay, I haven't found my boomerang. But it's telling me I can get on the ship and leave now. Maybe if I talk to the person, it'll be like, oh, it looks like you found everything except this one thing, and here it is. And then just, like, hand it to me. But that didn't happen. So I ended up, like, leaving that island, taking the ship away from it. And then it, like, opens up transport back and forth. You don't have to, like, do anything to get back there. So as soon as I, like, arrived at the destination, I was like, nope, take me back. I had to go find my boomerang. So I went looking for it again, and I could not fucking find any, like, at any hint of where this thing might be. So that's when I jumped onto Twitter for the first time in fucking years, and I looked up the developer, saw it was this one guy, and here's his Twitter handle. Cool. Sending you a message like, dude, I'm in this place. Where's my boomerang? And I didn't get a response, and I poked around the next day looking for it again, and I did eventually find it. There are, like, these gravestone-looking things that you had to desecrate. You had to move them around in order to find, like, a hole that you drop down. And then there's another chest on there, and that's where your boomerang ended up. Somebody buried it with a corpse for some reason. But then I saw the message, like, never mind, I found it. Well played. So, like, he did eventually respond, and we got into a back and forth about, like, certain design decisions that he had made and what led him to making the game one way versus the other. And
did you ask him who buried the boomerang with the corpse?
No, but now I might.
It's like, is there a lore thing to why this boomerang got buried?
How to get down there, yeah. Why is it in the grave?
Did what I lose the boomerang, did you go rogue and murder your wife and you just buried it with her? Buried the murder weapon
with
the wife?
It's a sentient boomerang? Maybe.
Maybe it was the world's first boomerang and he didn't realize what was going to happen when he threw it.
Mm. Oh, so it came back?
And it killed him.
Yep. Could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, so...
Valid question.
This game, I'm making a lot of Zelda comparisons. It is very much like a Zelda game.
I can see why it looks a lot like Zelda.
When he was telling me a little bit about why it was he even set out to make the game, he described his situation as he was, like, building himself or assembling a Raspberry Pi, a retro console, and he saw that there were people who had their own sort of, like, projects. They made their own Zelda games. And, like, that kind of got him into programming and seeing how he could do that sort of thing himself. And he ended up making a game out of it. So he's very much aware. Like, he set out, the way he describes it, to, like, make his own Zelda game. So, you know, you could describe it as derivative, but that was really kind of the intention. So I think that there are some things in this game that he does that really sets it apart from most Zelda games. Like, oh, how is it describing, like, the environmental design, much more akin to a Breath of the Wild or an original NES Legend of Zelda than more, like, modern Zelda games that are sandwiched in between the two, where you have more bespoke areas. Also, it's reminded me a bit of Hollow Knight in the way that you just kind of, like, or Hyper Light Drifter, where you just kind of, like, poke at the corners, and you will eventually, like, it's really rewarding, because if you see something in the game that looks strange, it will probably have some sort of meaning to it or some sort of quest assigned to it, where it will do something. And some of them are pretty tough to decipher. You can spend a lot of time, like, just kind of looking around and finding things. And, like, even though I spent, like, 10 to 12 hours in this game just looking for stuff, there were a ton of just, like, heart pieces, to use the Zelda comparison again, that I didn't end up finding. Like, there are two rows of hearts, like, in a Zelda game, and I filled, like, maybe 30% of that second row. There are still a ton of things that I hadn't found, which is really cool, because it makes me think, like, if I go back to it at some point, now that I finished it, I'll kind of poke around and find some even more things. There's a quest line that opens up right at the end. As you're in the final dungeon, there's a thing that you find that opens up a quest line that you then backtrack to before you take on the final boss. It's also a bit more... free-flowing when it comes to the dungeons. When I was talking to the guy, he was describing the dungeons, the hardest part for him to design. He even like sent me like a piece of like notebook paper or graph paper where he did like this big dungeon design drawing to it. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. The dungeons themselves are probably more rudimentary Zelda, something more like a handheld Zelda, like an Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons, that kind of thing. A lot of the elements are very familiar, using keys, having kill rooms, switches that will raise and lower platforms. So nothing super foreign here. I think one of the things that I think is impressive about the dungeons is that it just feels like an extension of the overworld. So there are times where I would like enter an area and be poking around there a little bit and then realize, oh wait, I'm in a dungeon right now. So I think it just kind of blends with the overall design of the world really well. But yeah, I think this game was like $20, 15 or $20 when it came out. I think this is definitely one to keep an eye on. I had a really, really good time with this one.
Nice.
But speaking of having a really good time with a game, we played some River City Girl Zero.
Oh, God.
Sure did.
Ooh, and that game has aged.
That's not a nice, no.
No,
it's not a good time. Like, after like 20 minutes of playing this game, I had to sit there for a minute and just think to myself, why am I still playing this?
Yeah, it's, I think it was a Super Nintendo game that has been ported over. WayForward brought it over, and WayForward also did the River City Girls game that came out a couple years back. They're doing River City Girls 2 that is due out at some point this year. They didn't do a whole lot in order to modernize this game. So it's quite stiff. As far as like the action is concerned, your punches and your jabs and your kicks, the combos don't really flow together all that well. Characters move quite slowly. Sometimes things don't align perfectly well. So like the hit detection gets a little bit weird. There was a point where Wes, we were playing, and I was just like next to this thug, and we were like right on top of each other. Like the pixels were like overlapping, and we were both like throwing punches, but of course neither one of us was connecting. So we just looked like two assholes punching each other and not making any sort of contact. And there are things about this game that are just weirdly sluggish. Like, there's a ton of dialogue to work through in this beat-em-up.
God, there's so much talking.
And sometimes there's so much talking that the character models will go into their idle stance, which is just like squatting. Yeah. Just, like, squat down.
Which is really awkward for the girl to do that.
Yeah. She's wearing a skirt. Her hand positioned to the point where, like, she's tucking down the skirt.
Still, it's very ladylike of her to just squat.
I guess I've never heard of, like, Slav squatting. You guys never heard of that?
Negative.
No. It's just a stance that, like, I don't know, people in the Eastern Bloc take, I guess.
Okay.
You know, where they're just, like, squat, like they're doing that kind of squatting on their legs.
All right.
I guess because they don't make chairs in Russia or something.
Can't afford them.
Yeah. No, you've never heard of Slav squatting. It's like it's not a meme. It's a joke. It's a thing. It's like how people in Canada like to wear, like, denim jackets and denim jeans that are the same color.
Yeah, the Canadian tuxedo.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, this game.
The other thing that annoyed me was we're trying to go up this building, and we'll go to a floor. We have to walk one end of the room fighting guys. Then we had to walk back to the other end of the room fighting guys. And then we had to walk back to the other end of the room fighting guys. Like, we're just going back and forth on the same fucking floor before a door opened up so we can go up. Like, it's just.
The level design is uninspired.
Oh, my God.
And the enemy design is also pretty uninspired.
I was rooting for the cops to find them. I was like, can we just wrap this up?
Just take them back to jail. End the game.
God, roll credits.
I can attest that the level design does not get much better as the game goes on. I did play a bit more.
John, are you okay?
I'm okay. I can't play Arceus for 5 hours a day.
I'm just saying, playing more of that is like a cry for help.
There is a point where there's a point where you leave a schoolyard and you like go to a theme park. I'm sad to report it is not much more interesting. There's a point where I had to fight thugs on a Ferris wheel, and like the cars would be rotating around, of course, as a Ferris wheel does, and you would go to punch them and they'd fall off the side, so then you'd have to jump down and like fight them, and then another one would spawn on the Ferris wheel cars and you have to jump back up and punch that one down and go back to the ground. there's just something weird going on where, you know, the game has been brought over, has been localized because the two River City Girls characters are in it. Mm-hmm. Misako and Kyoko, they play worse. Like, they do fewer things than the male characters in this game. So, and maybe for, like, some sort of, like, weird sense of propriety reasons, because the one thing that happens when you knock an enemy thug down, there's a couple of different maneuvers you can do. You can, like, stand over them and use your kick button to just kind of ground stomp them. Another thing you can do, you stand over them and hit your punch button. You actually mount the guy and start wailing on them in the face. It might, like, upset someone's, like, puritanical sense of morality to see the girl character mount the male thug character and punch him in the face.
That's not the one position that's allowed.
But it just makes it so, like, those characters are less useful.
It seems like they are their girlfriends in this movie. In that movie, in this game.
Right. Right, I think...
Which is very confusing.
Right, which is not the case for the River City Girls modern games.
Yeah, which was the big punchline that was really funny.
Yeah, they're more like these weird, creepy stalkers. Yeah. But yeah, this game, this game isn't good. I like, even as a weird, like, curiosity, like a throwback beat-em-up game, there are better beat-em-up games on the Super Nintendo than this game was.
Yeah, like, Turtles in Time.
Yeah, Turtles in Time. Like, this game doesn't live up to, like, Final Fight.
Well, it reminds me a lot of, like, Double Dragon, like an NES game.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminds me of a prior generation of games.
I think, like, visuals aside, like, it plays very much like a last-gen game. There's nothing about...
If you are getting into this, it's because of the dressing. It's all of the stuff happening around it, not the game itself. It's all of the music and the cutscenes and stuff like that.
Which they always do a really great job with. Like, there was a little intro song and an intro, like, comic scene, which was really fun. And then the game started, and I was like, oh, I'm not having fun anymore.
Yeah, the fights just seem to go on for too long. Mm-hmm. Just taking out one bad guy seemed to take forever. Everyone kind of looks the same. The controls were clunky, like you were saying. It was very difficult to line up your character with the bad guy. You didn't feel a good sense of combos. Like, and granted, however many years have passed between this and then what we played with River City Girls, where River City Girls, like, nails all that perfectly. Mm-hmm. It's like combos feel really intuitive, and it's very kinetic, and you kind of feel the punch and stuff.
You learn more as the game goes on. Like, yeah. You become a better equipped to handle, like, the standard thugs that you're seeing early on in the game. Mm-hmm. And the River City does have this sort of curve to it, at least modern River City games. Like, Scott Pilgrim did this as well, where the deeper you get into the game, the better your character gets, the more maneuvers you get, the more efficient you are at taking out grunts.
Yeah.
This game does not seem to do that at all. By the point I was out of the game, like, I was taking characters out more efficiently, but that's because I was using the same thing over and over again. Jump kick to the face, stomp them while they're on the ground, back up a little bit, jump kick them again, stomp on while they're on the ground, and you're done.
Yeah, that isn't exactly
fun. No, it's not particularly fun. Especially, like, in this theme park stage, you know, you fight guys on a Ferris wheel, you fight a bunch of people on a roller coaster, not on the track, but in the queue line, and there's, like, a little scene where you can ride the roller coaster and everyone gets off. I'm like, that was really fun. All right, let's go to the next spot.
Really?
Yeah. It did not affect gameplay in the slightest.
Way to show us the candy and then not let us try a little bit, you know?
But
it's like, no, you'll do all of the stuff away from the roller coaster. Just know that it's there and you can't ride it.
There was, in this part of the game, like, I was fighting enemies one at a time. Like, there wasn't even, like, any sort of juggling I had to do. But anyway, I think we've spent enough time on this game that it should be totally passed on. Like, if you like River City Girls, YouTube,
play more of that.
YouTube the cutscenes for River City Girls Zero if you want new stuff. A couple other games that came out, Voice of Cards, Forsaken Maiden, and this was a weird release because there was no lead up to it. I don't know if you guys remember, but last year there was a Nintendo Direct where they announced this Voice of Cards game. There was a demo. It looks interesting. It's like a little dungeon crawling JRPG where the visual aesthetic is that everyone is represented by a card. And they released another one.
Yeah.
They released another one. Like, really quick turnaround and no real lead up to it. Assassin's Creed the Ezio Collection came out on the 17th.
I would like to play it, but I'm skipping.
Thumbs up from Wes.
And this was the best of the Assassin's Creed. If you haven't played Assassin's Creed games, play this collection. Because all these games were the best ones. I played a few of the other ones. These are great.
What was the newest one? Was it Valhalla? Something like that?
Yeah, Valhalla was the newest one. Before that was Odyssey, which I did not play Odyssey. It looked interesting. And then I did play Origins, which was fun. I liked Origins. But the SEO collection is definitely the highlight of the series.
And then last but not least, the last game is Soul Cresta. This one came out on the 22nd. This is a shooter game, like an arcade spaceship shooter, where like a 1941 or 1942, something like that, where you're using your little, or Ikaruga, where you're in a little plane, you shoot the incoming enemies with your bullets. There are a number of different layers going on of this one. It was developed by Platinum, who develops Bayonetta, Astral Chain. You know them, you love them.
Yeah.
So there are, instead of grabbing like power-ups that give you different guns, what you do is you end up grabbing augments to your ship. Basically, another ship will fly in, you'll run into them, and then you'll combine Voltron style and become a better ship. And there's a red, a blue, and a yellow. And once you have all three, what you can do is switch up your formation. So, you know, you tap the B button and you sort of like arrange them in a diagonal line or in a little triangle. It'll give you a little visual cue as to which one that you are forming. And that will affect the type of weapons that you were shooting. Sometimes it could be, depending on your formation, it could be a spread laser, it could be some homing missiles, and also affect your charge up special. Sometimes it'll be a big beam going forward, sometimes it'll put a drill at the end of your ship and you just kind of ram into things. So while that's going on, you're also building up a score meter. And as you build up your score meter, it's also unlocking different maneuvers. Sometimes it'll just give you like a speed up to your ship or a power up to your ship. It could give you an extra life. It gets weird when you start unlocking, for the lack of a better word, combos. It's kind of like works like a fighting game where you can like do a quarter circle and attack and it will unleash a barrage of bullets to your left or your right. Or you can do like an up down attack, like tapping, and it will unleash a barrage of bullets directly in front of you or behind you. And there are a few different things like that, or like you do a full circle around an attack and unleash a spray of bullets all around you, give you a radial attack. So there are a few different things like that, and I think that if the game were a little bit less hectic, it would be more interesting to try to execute those maneuvers, but they throw so much at you. There's a bullet hell game. They throw so much at you that I hardly ever have time to focus on anything except shoot the thing that's in front of me. And you know, I was playing on normal difficulty level for a while. I turned it down to easy. I didn't see much of a difference. There might have been fewer enemies on the screen, but there were still a lot. I might like, there's a very easy mode as well, and then there's like ultimate fucking pussy mode. I might turn it down to very easy just to see like what the enemy situation is, to see if I can get used to like switching up formations on the fly. Because when you're playing the game, it's tough to like decide I'm going to switch formations now because there's so much coming at you that...
Careful, like, John. Very easy mode is a gateway drug.
Yeah, it might be. I'll end up playing that pony game that Ryan was talking about. With the unicorns, raise my unicorns or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was that? Oh, my God. Well, there's two weird ones. There's the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen Pony Island Adventure.
Mm-hmm. Ultimate classic.
And then there's one where it's like a pony dating simulator, where it's like they're all princes or something, but they're also horses.
Oh, right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know the game.
Are you a girl trying to hook up with the prince horse?
But no, it's wholesome. You're not trying to hook up. You're trying to date.
Yeah.
It's wholesome.
So it's just the hug and hold on tight.
Yeah. Where, you know, you awkwardly go to a flea market.
Yeah. Oh.
What?
just got an image of John saying at flea market next to a fucking pony.
Yeah, just... we're sharing a funnel cake.
Yeah,
and it's a great time. Don't you judge what me and Buttercup do? But yeah, I think like this is an interesting game, Soul Cresta. Not the pony dating one. I'm sure that's interesting too. But I didn't play it. I played Soul Cresta. It's an interesting game, and there's a lot going on with it for a sort of just an arcade shooter. There is a mission select mode, so it's not like you have to play the whole thing straight through. A lot of times the way I approach it is like, okay, I'm going to play one mission, and then I'm going to take a break, then I'll come back to another time. It looks like there's a total of 7 missions. You can go back to them for like high scores and stuff. It's a high score attack game. I got a bit of sticker shock when I bought this one, but then I was like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. It's $40. Which
Jones has made of money.
Yeah, apparently. I did not give a fuck that
make
day.
Make it rain.
This does not look like a $40 game.
Yeah, when I didn't know much about it other than it was a shooter game that Platinum made. So it was pretty invested to start with. If I realized that it was like only 7 missions and then you were done, I probably would have waited for a sale. But I think like this game was probably meant for people who were really into going for like the high score and playing through perfectly and unlocking all the difficulty modes, going up to the hardest difficulty and playing through that. Not typically how I play these shooter games, if I ever play them at all. So, you know, I think there is a particular audience for this game, and maybe they'd find that price more digestible if you're just kind of moderately curious about how a shooter game that Platinum made, an arcade shooter, I'd say wait for a sale. Because you'll get through this one in a couple hours and then be done with it. I think that Little Nightmares 2 is the better $40 game.
Still. God.
So there were a few new movies that came out. Speaking of new releases, you guys.
Yeah. It's been a busy couple weeks for me at the box office.
Yeah. Moonfall came out at the beginning of the month.
Ooh, it did.
And what a movie that was.
Sure was.
I am both happy and upset that I sat through that.
You know,
it's very weird.
As we were saying, we all saw it together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Holding hands.
Yeah, of course.
Like we do.
Brittany thought it was weird, but this is how we see movies.
Yeah.
So, as we were sitting down, Wes, you like looked over at us and were like, is this movie gonna be any good? And like, no, Wes, this is going to be a train wreck. And it did not disappoint. Oh my God.
Like,
it was
such a train wreck to the degree that it was good.
Oh yeah, I
thoroughly enjoyed the movie.
This movie, it was a delight. Like, I would absolutely watch this again. It is terrible.
Oh, it's so bad.
It is such a bad movie.
Oh.
Ryan, your thoughts on Moonfall?
Oh, let's start with Ryan's analytical breakdown.
Just the height of absurdity. I mean, you know what you're getting into. It's a Roland Emmerich film. Like, this is what this guy does. He just...
I thought it was Michael Bay going into it. Because I forget why we were talking about Michael Bay prior. Well, I thought this was a Michael Bay movie.
Understandable.
They're very similar, but Michael Bay... Armageddon counts as science fiction, but generally he stays in the world of action. Down-to-earth action
films. Or like disaster.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles and...
Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. I would not... Compared to what Roland Emmerich does when he makes a film, which is like an Independence Day, Day After Tomorrow, those kind of films are what he calls home. So, like, he's doing much larger, in-depth science fiction stuff. Not like a Bad Boys movie or The Rock or something.
Transformers.
Know? Yeah. Actually, I take it back. You know, he is making some science fiction films.
But I think there's a difference of scope, whereas you know like the robots are doing something that's going to save the world, but it's not. Is it like a world-ending disaster in those Transformers movies?
The Dark Side of the Moon, like they're trying to save the world because the Decepticons are going to take it over. But I mean, the Roland, what's his face?
Roland Emmerich and Emmerich make movies where it's the death of, movie. It's the death of mankind.
It's Armageddon.
Yeah.
Shit's going down.
Mm.
Like this is it. Roll credits. We're all gonna die. Like
I don't know why we're talking about the nuances between these two hacks movies. but
that's what he does. He just makes these big movies in which you get to watch truly disastrous scenarios and millions of people die, and you just sort of
and everybody seems like not okay with it, but perfectly fine with it.
Well, there's a kind of camp to it.
Like nobody's like freaking out about it. I mean, in certain points, like they're just generally.
Yeah.
Everybody seems pretty well adjusted about this.
The people on screen are keeping their cool, generally.
Yeah.
Well, it also, like, again, that I think that's important to note is that with all of his movies, they play it straight. It's not like they're making a movie where everyone acknowledges how weird and silly all of this is. They are trying their best to, you know, read the dialogue they're given and, you know, portray these characters. Like, it's just, it's, It's really funny. And again, there are a couple of nuggets of true science and what would happen if the moon were to crash into Earth. Including like when they're talking about like the Roche limit, where it's like there comes like it's not like going to in a big ball crash into Earth. It will eventually start to break apart like the rings of Saturn. You know, they would eventually just, because of the gravitational effect of what's going on with Earth relative to the size of the moon, it would just start tearing off chunks of the moon. But then you realize the fact that the moon is an artificial thing created by an alien race.
Right.
From the distant past.
Shit, spoilers. Damn it.
Oh, are we spoiling this movie?
Yeah, we're spoiling it.
We're spoiling the shit out of this movie. Yeah, we don't care. It's still worth a watch if you haven't watched it. Sit through the spoilers and still go in and enjoy this.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I think that's the whole, like, it's almost like he briefly, he cut them off mid-sentence when a scientist was trying to explain to Roland Emmerich how this works, and he's like, I got what I need. He's like,
I like but you hit the screen, like, your Zoom call has ended.
Yes.
My favorite moment. I think when I knew I was 100% on board for what this movie was doing was
there
was
that, exactly what you're about to say.
There was that part. I might surprise you here, Wes. There was that part where, you know, the moon getting closer was fucking up the tides, and they were in that hotel because they were having like their meeting, and then what the lead our lead actor Patrick
oh Patrick Wilson.
Patrick Wilson
yeah
shows great up actor. Shows up and
above this kind of thing.
but I think I was gonna say, I was about to say he's trying his damnedest. I don't know that that's true. he shows up at this hotel, they're having this meeting, the tides are going crazy, like the water's coming in, and like he has to drag our second our supporting male actor out of the water, and they're on the staircase, they're breathing so heavy, he's like, oh my god, we're safe, the water's definitely not going to come up the stairs. And they're exhausted, and the next thing you see is the two of them sitting in a hotel room in bathrobes. Like, yes! Oh, amazing!
I really was thinking that while it was happening, I was like, oh man, they're going to spend the rest of this movie wet. And fully clothed, drenched, no worse feeling than that, being in wet denim. You know, that's got to suck.
Like, yeah, it's terrible. This and oh like God. No, they took a break from the end of the world to dry off their clothes, sitting there together in bathrobes, presumably nothing underneath.
Right,
just two total strangers in the same room. There's more than one room.
The entire fucking house.
Like no, we're bunking together.
Well, there's a lot that goes down with how limited the cast is and how everything seems to revolve around them. Because even how it sets up, it's like Halle Berry, like the premise of it is like prior to all of this shit going wild with the moon falling off of its orbit, you've got Halle Berry and Patrick Wilson are two established astronauts who are on a space mission, and like one of their crewmen dies out there because of something that the moon is doing.
Now, that's how the movie opens up, and it like they have like this weird like Tarantino-esque conversation about like the lyrics of that that Toto song.
Yeah, it's like a Royale with cheese kind of situation. Right,
with like the lyrics that no one has ever messed up.
Yeah.
Like everyone knows that anyway. You were saying.
No, just that like that's how they're going to bring this into play. And then from that point on, you've got both of them dealing with broken families.
Mm.
And it's like with the scope of everything that's happening right now, are we really supposed to get into a family drama?
Like, they try real hard though.
Did we need that, right? And you've got, like, that he has an ex-wife with which they had a son together, and the son is a juvenile delinquent. And then you're dealing with Halle Berry, who as well is also broken up with her ex, who is now, like, a military commander.
Yeah, he works at the Department of Defense.
Real convenient that he's the one with his, finger over the switch, whether or not to, like, destroy the Earth.
He's literally has the key to the nukes.
Yes. So
to just launch at the moon, which I can't see that being an actual.
No, we covered that in Armageddon. We know what would happen. There was that.
You have to drill it into the moon and blow it so it goes around.
Right. You need to get Earth. You need to get Steve Buscemi
and
a bunch of other assholes up on the dark to.
Yeah. That's what you gotta do.
Yeah, I mean, you could detonate every nuke on the moon right now. Like, bring them all there, light them all off at the same time, and it really wouldn't matter. It would scorch the surface of the moon for sure, it would fuck it up. But, like, it wouldn't do anything to the
We have a better chance of everybody going to the beach and screaming at a hurricane to make it go the other direction.
Although, I will say, like, if they send the oil riggers up to the moon in Moonfall to drill the hole, they're just going to find it hollow.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So
and some lovely crops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well grown crops. There was the mechanical goop alien which really fucks things up. That gets back to the first scene you were saying.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. So like that's what's going on that they establish is that it's sort of like a virus that feeds off of its host's energy. That's what's supposed to have happened, right? Is that all of this technology existed, and then they created the AI achieved this point. Again, this is...
They did not explain that well.
Ancient history. Like, they're literally... And by the way, like, you know, we evolved from apes, and yet they're showing us what looked pretty much just like fucking humans.
Right, so that
from way the hell back when.
Yeah, this...
Millions
this
of years ago.
Amazing feat of engineering where they're like, okay, we're going to send these moons out, they're going to find planets, they're going to see life on this planet, they're going to put a little bit of DNA down there, and that life will evolve the exact way we want it to.
Yeah.
Well done.
It's almost like they took the premise of The Matrix... Except they're literally siphoning the energy off of technology. Mm. And then I couldn't even keep up with it when they were getting into the third act of like how it's reading biomass and technology at the same time. And it's both and it attacks.
Contrived bullshit. Yeah, because they were like trying to like send out the drone with the bomb. Like it'll go after this because it reads the electrical signal and then it ignores it. Like, oh, it's reading electricity and our bio signal.
We can just spoil this movie, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It even hits the same punchline that Armageddon does where it's like the same way that Bruce Willis is the one that has to go out there and detonate the thing. It ends up being for the actor. I can't remember his name. I'm sure it's
not Josh Gad. So this is someone who's doing a very good job.
John Bradley. Maybe. I think it might be this guy, John Bradley. Right. He is the one that decides that he's going to be like to sacrifice himself so that they can detonate this thing. Basically, because like, well, somebody's got to die.
But
this isn't going to be a high stakes movie if everyone lives. aside from like the 3 billion people on Earth that are dead,
a lot of people do die.
Right.
But not him.
Not on screen.
Oh yeah. Oh,
well, except for Tom. Tom Michael Pena.
We don't know that. Yeah. We don't know that.
You're right. Right. He could be fine.
We don't see a corpse. We just see him sort of like suffocate on the ground dead. Which, by the way, like of all of the people, granted, everyone's had a rough go of this scenario, right? Billions are dead. Like the whole world's fucked. But like, you know who got it worse of all of the core characters, which is like maybe 15 people? It's the two girls that are biologically not Patrick Wilson's daughters.
Yeah, their dad's dead.
Their dad's dead. They hate this guy. Their older brother is for all we know, like a terrible individual. But that was a handgun.
Okay, so we got to spend 2 minutes on this kid. Because, my God, like, this actor is so fucking wooden. Like, right. I hope he has a great career and I hope he becomes a better actor. He is terrible in this movie. Everything he says is just, like, fucking monotone. The only time I believed him is when, like, the computer simulation on the moon does that contact thing. It's like, I look like this because I thought you'd be more accepting to it. Only time I believed he was doing any sort of acting. But he is this delinquent. The very beginning of when this movie has a terrible sense of time. Oh, when you get when you catch up to the present, and Patrick Wilson is this deadbeat loser, which I don't for a second buy that they would say, okay, you're fired from being an astronaut, and then he has no other prospects. Fuck off.
Right.
He's a fully trained fucking astronaut.
Right. You screwed up this one thing. Your career is over. Anyway, his soon-to-be adult son is on the news because he has stolen a car and is in a high-speed police chase.
Yeah.
And then ends up in court. Patrick Wilson shows up and makes the whole thing go pear-shaped.
Far worse, yeah.
And ends up in jail. Gets him out of jail in order to escape the end of the world, and then is like, we have to go our separate ways. Take my gun. You're not trustworthy with a car. Take my firearm. What the fuck?
And on top of that, the other thing is, they're like, take my gun, hop in this car, this girl who is probably your age, and this young child that you just met, and just ignore the two other helicopters grabbing everybody else from the base and flying off.
Man.
It's just beyond, like, it just doesn't make any sense.
They needed, Roland Emmerich needed that moment where someone is driving a car on space debris that's floating in the sky because gravity's all fucked up.
Yes.
He needed that.
Oh yes.
And that's how he was going to get it.
Yes.
Now, this movie just gives you that, both barrels all the time.
Yep. You know? That's what we were there for.
And I love how, like, they get on top of them, or they're in the moon now, and moon gets, like, their spaceship just gets iced. It's gone. Right? And then, like, they have extra craft there or something, and then we're like, well, how are they going to get back to Earth anyways? And it's just, like, they did this sweet, like, you know, they slowed the car down to 15 miles an hour and kicked them out the side.
Mm-hmm.
Basically is what happened. Like, there is so much loose science in this movie that you just gotta laugh.
Yeah, like, one of the jet engines go out, and they give up immediately on saving the Earth.
Oh, my, like, this,
oh, yeah, movie, just throwing this was literally just... In a course of a 5-minute conversation, they go from, we're going to the moon, engine's broken, we're all going to die. Like, it was just almost one sentence.
This movie is so good at undercutting its own drama. Like, there are points where they're like, the jet engine thing, like, oh, we lost one of the engines. Well, pack it in, fellas. Like, I guess we're done here. Everyone leaves. Like, wait, can you fly it on two engines if we just aim it right there? Yeah, I think I could.
Because the moon's gravity is going to pull us and half the ocean with it. And it's going to look real cool, but...
And, like, there are the two other, like, engineers who are standing there, like, well, we can't launch this thing with just the two of us here. Oh, wait, we have this third guy. He's right here. Like, oh, my God.
Not to mention that he hasn't been in a shuttle in 10 fucking years, and this one guy has zero training as an astronaut.
They're
like, we got this. We can do this right now.
There was another part where they're like, one of their obstacles they had to overcome was like, well, we don't have a spacecraft in order to get up there. And they're like,
oh, God, I forgot about that.
Well, what about that space shuttle right there? Like, oh, my God.
In the museum that says fuck the moon on it.
Yeah, and it's totally flight worthy. Like, they just got to roll it down the road to the launch pad, and it'll be fine.
That's absurd.
Just the whole press. It's just,
and I think
she doesn't even think about the thing. She had to bet the kid had to say something vaguely similar to there's a spaceship in the museum. They're like, that's a brilliant idea, son.
I'm like, yeah, there's
this whole thing is
like the sort of like stream of consciousness, like finding a solution just from casual conversation is a hallmark of these Roland Emmerich movies. I think the big one is like Independence Day, where he's like,
I was about to make that reference.
Get off the floor, you'll catch a cold. Like, what did you say? You're going to catch a cold. Oh, a computer virus. What the fuck are you talking about? We have an iMac. We can use my iMac to beat the aliens.
It was that, but like, every problem was one of those kinds. It was fantastic. Oh, that was...
How's about, like, the planting the seed but not paying off in any capacity Donald Sutherland's existence in this movie?
Jeez.
Who was Donald Sutherland?
The old guy in the wheelchair when she goes to, like, the archives.
Oh, right. It's like, Donald Sutherland, you're a huge actor. You're going to be a big part of this movie. Nope.
Never see him again.
One brief conversation, go shoot some stuff in the face.
He was the guy in the horror movie that's like, oh, don't go down that road. Yeah. You never see him again.
It's like he thought he had to play into this somehow. Like, no.
Nope.
And what about the whole crazy, like 2001, but not good ending, where it's like he ends up confronting the AI that, like, tells him about the history of everything.
Oh yeah, that's where you get all the backstory about why the moon is hollow and why it has like all of like the fields and shit in it. And why like the AI, like the evil AI is out to get them all. Like they dump you with all this exposition.
And we don't care.
No. This is not what we're here for. This is not why we're here.
Oh, we downloaded the guy's fucking brain.
We downloaded your consciousness. Like, oh.
And he's perfectly fine with it immediately. Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, all right, cool.
I don't have a body anymore. This is fine.
Yeah, we're good.
And then, like, and now it's time to get to work. And then the cut to credits.
Like, shit, there's going to be another one. Like,
no.
I'm happy and upset that there's probably going to be another one.
Maybe not. I don't know. It didn't do that well in the box office, actually.
Shocking.
This is the kind of movie.
Give us numbers.
Well, why don't you give me numbers? What do you think? What do you think is budget? Well, give me a budget for this movie.
Oof. I'll go first.
Go.
200 million.
I was going to go 150.
And Wes would be closer. You both overdid it at 140.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. They made this for 140. Good for them.
I mean, and keep in mind, Roland Emmerich is pretty good. He's pretty good at the box office, typically, when it's not, you know, post-pandemic or whatever. Like, he's pretty solid. What do you think this movie made?
Oh, gosh. I'd be surprised if it broke 100.
So what are you saying?
I'll go 100.
70.
40.
Ooh.
It didn't perform. Way low. But again, we'll see what happens when this gets... I don't even know what streaming services would go to.
Well, there's no way they made their money back on that.
Nope.
The production company is the, I don't even know who these people are, the Hawaii, not Hawaii, but Hawaii Brothers. Like, I've never heard of, these are not like major studios. I don't know, maybe they went outside of the studio system to make this movie.
Maybe.
But they sure found $140 million to make it. Oh no, distributed by Lionsgate. So I don't know who Lionsgate works with for, you know, streaming their services, but.
I'm not sure.
So that's what that is. Like, oh my God, this movie is just a mess.
Yep.
But it's so enjoyable.
Yeah, it really is. It's mud. And honestly, like, Day After Tomorrow kind of sucked, in my opinion.
Mm.
It wasn't the fun that you would hope it would be. It has those moments of silliness, like where, like, what is it, Jake Gyllenhaal is being chased down a hallway by the cold and slams the door in the face of the cold. It's like, I love that moment. But
like, what amazing piece of acting. Because, like, of course, like, all the wind effects are added in post-production, but he's like, he's running down a hall from nothing.
Yes. You know? Like...
Acting like the stakes have never been higher.
How does that movie end? Like, did they beat the cold? Like, is it
The planet is ruined, but they get to, like, the safe zone.
Yeah.
What's the safe zone?
Mexico.
For some odd reason.
Well, it's
like Land Before Time. There's that one place where there's the big water thingy, and there's some grass. And everyone's
what does Mexico look like now? Is it still snowy, or is it just like... Like, looks like Mexico.
Mexico in real life or Mexico in the movie?
In the movie.
I don't fucking know.
They get to Mexico.
This movie came out in like 2004.
I never seen it, and it was just like, how do you...
It'll come up on the retro show.
The sun's still there. Oh, fuck it.
Yeah, the sun didn't go away.
I don't care.
Yeah.
No, the zone collapsed or something?
The sort of premise of Day After Tomorrow is that climate change has gotten so out of control that there's a big shift. So... it brings on another ice age, basically. Mm. And, like, the entire, like, half, like, the top quarter of the planet in the north gets frozen over.
Mm.
Yeah, but his major films, I don't think it's all of them, but it's like, in 94, he made Stargate. I love Stargate. It's a good movie. Independence Day, Godzilla, The Patriot, The Day After Tomorrow, 2012, and another Independence Day.
Oh, yeah, they did the sequel.
And Midway.
Which wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was still bad, but wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
So, that's you know, totally a genre director doing his genre directing.
Hmm.
I'm surprised he did The Patriot.
Yeah. I would have guessed that was another one.
I have a feeling that Mel Gibson was probably a big driving, like, creative force behind that. Yeah. Like, they're probably making the movie Mel Gibson wanted to make.
Yeah. Which is funny.
The dog is a fine meal, though.
Mm.
Well, he's German, too. He's German and apparently openly gay.
Okay.
Good for him.
Yeah. So what is he doing making a movie about using an Australian guy to make a movie about the Patriot?
a German man and an Australian actor make a movie about...
What the hell is going on with that? That makes no sense.
No wonder they missed, like, all the important parts.
That would be like us using Antonio Banderas to make a movie about how they took down the Berlin Wall. Oh my God.
We can contact Antonio about this. We can do this.
Yeah. All right. Death on the Nile was also out. Thumbs up?
I saw it. Yeah. I liked it a lot. I thought it was very good.
Cool. Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh made it. He also plays the detective,
mm-hmm.
The French detective, and is it Clouseau or something like that?
Is it the same one from the Murder on the Orient Express?
Yeah. Yeah, the Agatha Christie series. There's actually a fun British... mini-series, I guess, that, like, I don't know, it looks like it came out in the 80s or something that I was watching, just because I was really enjoying these murder mystery things, and it was good. This one is interesting. It's got a really good cast, and it's a small wheelhouse of characters, and you're kind of constantly trying to figure out who it is that's the murderer, and of course it's the scenario where everybody simultaneously seems to have an alibi and a reason for you to believe they absolutely have to be the killer. And I think the big thing that they don't... Oh, and it's Gal Gadot is... I'm not spoiling anything because I think you're going to find out that there is not just one death, but there will be deaths.
Mm.
It's not just a death on the Nile. It's the deaths on the Nile is what it would be more accurately called. But, you know, it all centers around... She's the centerpiece murder that you figure out what happens in the trailer. So that's sort of like, who's going to be responsible for killing this woman? And I guess of all of the stuff that comes out by the end of it, you realize that, you know, even though she is absolutely beautiful and very charming, she's kind of a horrible person. Like, you don't outwardly see her being a horrible person, but everybody around her, when they describe their interactions with her, is like, oh, man, God, she's kind of awful, isn't she? You know? Again, not that you would wish death upon her for any one of these grievances that she has.
But how was she in the movie?
She's good. Again, she's fucking like, falling to that woman's face. She's like a kaleidoscope, you know, man. She's beautiful.
How dare you, sir?
I know. She's a wonderful lady.
She's gonna be on the. She's friend of the show, Gal Gadot.
I'm sure she's a great lady.
We're gonna have her on next week, where I get to confess that I didn't finish either Wonder Woman movie.
The first one was fine.
Okay.
Here's an example of why she's not such a great person. So she has a maid. Who is essentially contractually like hers.
Is this in the movie or in real life?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. She, you know, she's Jewish, by the way, so I don't think she would be into the whole slavery
thing. I'm
sure
they could have mates.
Yeah.
But slavery is generally frowned upon.
You.
Well, I mean, mates, not slave mates.
She'd be like, listen, don't even bother with that. My people know how to build the pyramids, not you. You know, she would probably just be like, back off. But here's like a scenario with her and the maid is like, the maid finds out, like, so it's revealed later on in the story that there was a party apparently at one point where there was a suitor that was attracted to her maid and said, you know, I'll marry you. I'll take you away from this life if you want to live with me. Gal Gadot's character discovers that he has some debts and she just goes to him on the sly and basically says, like, here's the thing. You don't take her and I'll pay off all your debts. And the guy chose to pay off all of his debts.
He's not a good dude either.
Right. So it's like she had a chance to escape, but basically she forced her hand and made it so that she'd never be able to leave this life.
Yeah, that's messed up. That's messed up.
You could justify that in a really roundabout way. Like, if he's accepting that deal, you shouldn't have been with him anyway. Gal Gadot did you a favor.
I mean, still, no, you're really, still a slave.
It's a really sly thing to do, though.
Yeah, it's just a... I mean, the guy was going to... take her away from the world anyways. It's just he was offered another out and was like, I'll take it. I don't know. Again, it's and I say that, I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't tell you that if that was the reason she was murdered, but
or would you
a character in it. And yeah we don't want to get into the plot. I think that's the whole fun of these kind of movies, is sort of trying to figure out this is a very highbrow version of the Scream movie I just watched like a month ago. Where it's the same deal at Scream, right? It's like you've got some grisly murders, and then you got to figure out who done it. It's very much that, except this is a very upper crust.
How's this compared to Knives Out?
Knives Out's better written for sure. Knives Out is really fucking fun.
God, I love Knives Out.
It's a real good movie.
I think you get the same thing. You get a lot of interesting characters, and it's kind of fun to see the story unravel. And, you know, it's a very classy film. It's well shot. It's interesting enough, and everyone does a really good job with the roles that they have in it. So,
cool.
I would recommend it. Yes.
Uncharted, thumbs up.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, again, I would say, and again, I have no dog in this hunt. I don't really care about the Uncharted games. I never played them.
I tried to play them, but God, I could not get into it.
Yeah.
Oh, I just couldn't.
I know some people care very deeply for that. Like a couple of people I've talked to about it were very much like, "Oh, I love the Uncharted games. I'm sure they're going to fuck this up. This is going to be horrible." And it's like, I mean, I don't care about the property. Again, it's sort of like the Resident Evil movie we just watched. Like the Resident Evil movie, we loved that. I mean, I don't know, love is a harsh word, or a hard word to say about that, but like I really enjoyed it.
That was a really good time.
Yeah, but I also really, really am into Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. Like I know all of the in jokes and stuff. I like that.
Right, so when Lisa Trevor pulls out the keys, and the club key and the diamond key and the heart key and the spade key, like, oh, that's her. She's got the keys. She's got the things that we love. there's no, like, it was a total total plot device. No reason that she had to whip out those keys or even be in possession of keys, and she never had those keys in the game. She was not even in the game with those keys in them. So,
but we get it.
Right, but she had the keys.
You know, and it's like if you didn't know what all that was, you would probably just be like, okay, it's a ho-hum zombie movie. So like maybe there's stuff
a zombie movie with really not a whole lot of zombies in it.
Yeah, actually very few zombies, which good for it. Like I think that's the thing that zombie movies need fewer of at this point is zombies. in Uncharted, it's this nice combination of like what they've done with the current Tomb Raider movies and mixing it with National Treasure. You know, a good amount of like good hard-boiled action and then camp of like the, you know, like the high adventure kind of thing that they're doing. Honestly, did you guys ever see that Adventures of Tintin movie?
Yeah, I don't remember much about it though.
I actually love that movie. It's really, really good. It's a good example of what this formula is. of just giving you these just wild set pieces that you can only come up with in a, you know, computer-generated environment. Mm. But at this point, so is so much of Uncharted. It feels like a computer-generated environment. But it, like, you're going on this big adventure where they're trying to uncover this thing. And apparently, the person I talked to when I described what the plot was, they were like, oh, it's the narrative of the first Uncharted game. So I guess you're getting that. You know, I would say that, you know, Tom Holland, from what I've seen of the video game, Tom Holland doesn't really look like the guy that is the Uncharted dude, Drake.
Yeah.
Nathan Drake.
He's a little small and...
Yeah.
Like, gangly. Like, there's not... Yeah.
And
still, they make fine. A joke about that on the trailer, like, oh, you'll hit puberty one day.
Yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg is the guy who says that line, which is great. And he plays this guy, Sully, and he doesn't look like what Sully is supposed to look like either, really.
Hmm.
But I don't think it really matters, because the two of them work well together. They have great chemistry. They're just fantastic together when they're on screen. You know, their fights kind of seem real. There's a kind of earnestness to both of their performances in this. You really get the sense that they have... figure these characters out, and when they're funny together, they're funny together. When they're fighting. It's good. I like it. And fun fact, I remember when I got to the end of the movie and the credits were rolling, I was like, wait a minute, they didn't use that line with the mustache and the thing. That's actually a post-credits teaser to the next movie?
They did a post-credits teaser in the trailer?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Oh my god.
I don't know if that spoils anything, aside from telling you that neither of them die. Of course they're not going to die. But
no, they're your leading men.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, yeah. Oh, and I guess I mentioned Antonio Banderas earlier. He's a villain in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that he's there.
Always nice to see him.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed this. I think it's a big old fun action romp. Worth seeing, unless you're the purist that's going to be really upset that they fucked up the Uncharted narrative.
Just
in your
think
mind.
Of it as a freaking movie, and not like who cares? It's a movie.
Yeah,
calm down, people.
Yeah,
but I want to see it. I don't know when, but yeah,
right now.
I was disappointed I couldn't go with you that day.
And back to Moonfall, that bass drop when they open the the sound design of that movie is insane. When they had that bass drop when they like open the alien door or whatever on the moon. And it's just sub-bass. He's just like, whoa. You guys remember that part?
No.
That fucking got me. Oh, my God. I was like, this is fantastic. No, nothing like that happens in Uncharted, where I don't think you could get the same viewing experience at home, you know, on your 70-inch television or whatever everyone has nowadays.
All right. Let's close things out with some games coming out in the month of March 2022. First up, Far Changing Tides. That one's one of the first. I'm really excited.
This one looks nice.
I'm really pumped for this one.
This one looks nice. I always have a heart... Oddly enough, I don't know why, but these kind of games when you're all by yourself in the middle of nowhere and everything, sometimes they get to me. I'm like, oh, God. Let me just see a face. Like, even though I'm alone in my room myself.
Well, I think...
This looks, like, enjoyable and calming and just... It's nice.
It is a sequel of sorts. There is another game called Far Lone Sails. I played that one earlier this year.
Oh.
It came out a few years back. And it is a very similar premise where you're a person alone, you're operating a vehicle, and that vehicle is taking you to a place. You're not exactly sure where you're going. But a lot of your gameplay resolves around giving fuel to your vehicle to keep it going, doing any sort of like maintenance, any sort of repairs that might happen just based on rough terrain or like a lightning strike or something. And you sort of like establish this like symbiotic relationship with this vehicle. Like there are no people, so it's the only other character in the game and you have to take care of it. And like if you try to like get out of the vehicle and just walk to the destination, I don't even know if it's possible, but it'd take you a real fucking long time. So, and there are also like, parts of the game where there's like a roadblock in your way, and I think they show something like that in the trailer to Changing Tides, where you know there's mechanical things you have to operate in order to open up a roadblock and keep your vehicle moving forward. I really liked the first game in this I suppose now franchise, so yeah, I'm pumped for this one. I think it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Triangle Strategies on the 4th. Another terribly named game by Square Enix.
Yep.
They dropped the project. They did the same thing with Octopath Traveler, where it was just called Project Octopath Traveler, and everyone was like, no, that's the working title. They're going to change it. It's not going to be called Project Octopath Traveler, and then they're like, we're calling it Octopath Traveler. They did the exact same thing with this game.
And they're and let's not pretend like they're not above giving things just ridiculous fucking names.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not running out of crazy names to give these things.
Nope.
You know? Like, I'm sure they've got a list of just, like, the most absurd names that
they have a random name generator, I'm sure of it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's just, like, some sort of, like, vaguely fantasy-based thing. My favorite Square Enix name game, I'm pretty sure it was Square Enix, but it was Infinite Undiscovery. What the fuck does that even mean? What the fuck are you talking about, you psychos? But Triangle Strategy, there is a demo for this. I think it covers the first three chapters of the game. I am playing through the demo. I have not gotten to all of it yet, but I think I'm on the last mission. And the save data does carry over. So it's not like you got to like retread the same territory again. I like the fights when you actually get into them. There is quite a bit of talking. There's a lot of dialogue being exchanged, a lot of names being thrown around, trying to like build this narrative around these three different kingdoms that are in the game. I think a lot of this is a backlash or reaction to how people critiqued Octopath Traveler, where there is a lot of criticism about how the characters in that game really didn't affect each other, and they're just kind of like party members as opposed to like a group working toward a similar goal. Everyone had their own same stories, and there really wasn't a whole lot of intersection in between. I'm fine with that, because that means there's less dialogue to skip. And Triangle Strategy, they're trying to have a more interwoven narrative. And they're kind of building that into gameplay as well, because there are points, as there are in some RPGs, where you have to make a decision about what you were going to do next, and I have a feeling it is going to affect party composition as the game goes on. So if there's a character I like, I'm going to have to pay attention to things that involve them if I want them to stay in the party. So it is forcing me to participate in this narrative, and I resent them for it. But the battles themselves, like, it's much more akin to a Final Fantasy Tactics as opposed to a Fire Emblem. There is not like a weapons triangle, oddly enough, in a game called Triangle Strategy. So like, any character is going to be able to attack any other different character. There are things, much like Final Fantasy Tactics, that will affect your performance in a fight, the terrain, the position you are facing. If you are near allied characters, you can kind of do pincer attacks. One thing that I've had to adjust to keep in mind is that when you are attacked, you will not counterattack. And the same goes for in reverse. If you attack an enemy, they will not counterattack your character. So, you know, it makes it to where battles are taking longer than I'm used to in these strategy games, because you can rip through with the right positioning of your units. You can play really defensively in a Fire Emblem and rip through battles fairly quickly. Whereas in this one, like, even the earlier battles were taking, you know, a bit longer because it wasn't really just wasn't pumping out enough damage. But I did find, like, once you're past the second mission, there is a sort of skirmish mode that you can go through and grind out some levels if you really want to and unlock new skills. Because it is much more of, like, an RPG in the way it behaves, with, like, upgrading your character passives and your character, like, active skills in a fight. So it seems to have more customization than there had been in previous Fire Emblems, but I suppose Fire Emblem Three Houses really does open up to a lot of customization there as well.
Well, it seems interesting, at least from what the trailer describes it. There's only four characters. This isn't like a tactics kind of game where you've got a roster of 40 characters.
Where I'm at now, I think you're right. I don't think it'll get up to like 40 characters, and you have characters that are sort of inconsequential to the things that are going on. Yeah. Right now,
they'd say that there's like a prince, his younger brother, the betrothed, and this like the servant.
So I have, I think...
The maid that was enslaved that couldn't marry
the guy. Gal Gadot's lady-in-waiting.
Yep. No, this is the guy, though.
Okay. So there are, in the group that I have now, in the third chapter, there's like a core group of seven, maybe eight characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure like the roster will grow beyond that to an extent, but every character is like specialized within their character class, and I don't know that the game is ever going to like like interbreed classes. I don't think there's going to be like any a point where you're going to change and like start gathering skills from other classes. It's going to be more about how the synergy of your team is working rather than building godlike characters. So there's a, you know, your what you consider your standard sword fighter class character, and he's also works a little bit like Titus in Final Fantasy X, where he has a skill that will delay your target's next turn. There is a tactician character, and he, kind of a weak attacker, but he is working with like stat buffs and debuffs. You know, a mage and a healer, which are exactly what they sound like. There is a winged mounted unit that attacks at range. It can also deal out status ailments like blind and poison. There's a thief or like an assassin type character. And in the previous demo, this character had a skill that hasn't shown up yet. Maybe it's a skill that shows up as you unlock more of the character tree, where she can disappear from the battlefield and like set up an ambush for an enemy, where she comes invisible to an enemy, but then can like do a quick backstrike. And also, when this character attacks, if the hit lands successfully, you get a follow-up attack. So that's been a really useful character. So they're mixing and matching classes, and then you have your standard like tanky character that can draw a lot of attacks toward him, which is important because it's easy to get overwhelmed, and you have like these masses of units where, you know, you have their six guys and your eight guys, and you kind of like just set up in lines and clashing against each other. So it's good to have someone who's going, you know, is going to be drawing all the fire. But yeah, I think it's an interesting looking game. That's it. That's all. Wes, do you remember Dot Hack?
Vaguely. I never played Dot Hack. I watched a bit of the anime. There's an anime for this.
This was like a multimedia property.
Didn't make any fucking sense, the anime. Like, probably. I was completely lost, and it was the most boring thing I ever watched because nothing was fucking happening. They're just talking at each other.
Probably because it, like, was taking place in between games, because it's like it wasn't like an independent thing. Like, the games, there was a show, and I think there might have been a comic or like some visual novels or something, and they all were telling different parts of the same story.
It was one of those animes where, when I watch anime, I really like the ones with really good action and good fight sequences and stuff like that. I went, it's a fucking cartoon. Let's see some cool shit happen.
Uh-huh.
But it was one of those animes where we're going to talk for 20 minutes and then we're going to show you the fight, but it's at the end of the fight.
Oh.
And, like, that's it. And now we're going to talk at you some more, and you're not going to be following what we're talking about because it doesn't make any fucking sense. I have bad memories of this anime.
Well, you can play the game now because they're porting it to the Switch.
I mean, the fucking trailer for the thing, the last, like, 10 seconds had gameplay.
Right? Jeez.
Like, shit, it's the show again.
Yeah. Like, they keep doing this sort of thing. Like, they even do it with the Triangle Strategy trailer, where they're showing, like, character portraits and stuff. Like, it's not what people should be here for. Show the game.
I want to see
the
gameplay. I want to see what we're doing.
Right. Now we're going to be reading. Show us what we're going to be doing.
I don't
want to
play this game because the cinematics look cool. Mm. Like, no. Show me the fucking game.
If I wanted that, I'd watch the show.
Which, you know, it looked okay.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how the games are, but it looked okay.
Yeah. I think none of us here are going to try this game. Like, I don't think any of us care.
If it's, I don't know.
I certainly have zero interest in this.
I have way more important stuff to do than to touch a Dot Hack game.
Hmm. Like, build your little models.
Yeah, build my little models. Why are we bringing those up? No, I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima. I mean, like, I got Elden Ring.
By
Triangle Strategy. We got another fucking Pokemon game coming out.
By calling them little models, that sounded more condescending than I meant. Like building models is a legit hobby.
Although, I did buy some models that are legitimately really, really little.
Mm. He's building his macho big dick models. It's cool.
And then my accurate little tiny models.
Aztec Forgotten Gods, that one's coming out on the 10th. This one was one that was showcased at a Nintendo Direct recently.
This looks good.
Yeah.
I would be interested in playing this.
It looks cool. This one
I will play this over Dot Hack.
Yeah, certainly. This one I'll probably stick on a wish list and keep an eye on, but like you were saying, there's too many other games right now.
This is a big year for games in general. I mean, there's just so much to do.
Yep.
Oh, not that Ghost of Tsushima came out this year. I just am now starting it.
But still. Ryan, any thoughts on this Aztec game?
Looks ridiculous. It starts with a Pokeball. The first thing you see does start with the Pokeball. So
gotta draw people in.
Yeah, hey, that's fine. No, I don't care about this.
Chocobo GP? Anybody?
Nope.
Nope.
It looks fine.
Okay.
It's free, right?
No. That's the Disney one that's free.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not paying money for this.
Here's the thing. I think you self-select a lot of this content. There's probably other games that are coming out that we're not talking about.
Oh, yeah. He selected the
stuff. He basically picked all of these boring-ass RPGs that we got
to
talk
about. If you guys ever want to add anything to the list, I'm totally open to that.
Yeah.
Go for it. Add to the list. Okay. And, you know, I put Assassin's Creed on there for Wes.
Yeah. Which you should play that.
Oh, Ryan, there's a fighting game. What was a fighting game on for you? Phantom Breaker Omnia.
God. Oh, fantastic. With its suggestive themes and mild language.
Yes! Oh, just suggestive themes and severe language. That's what we want.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, like...
And then, no, that's not it, but that's another fighting game. Which one is... I don't know what this is.
Phantom Breaker?
Oh, no, we are talking about Phantom Breaker. I thought we were talking about the Persona one already.
No. Persona 4 Arena Ultimate is out, like, 2 days later.
Yeah.
But... it's got Persona characters that fight instead of these other characters that fight.
No, we were just talking about Bandai Namco a minute ago. And, I mean, I was playing that most recent Dragon Ball fighting game.
Oh, that's right.
Which was fantastic. It was really, really good.
Hmm.
Which, this looks like one of those fighter games where... I don't play fire games. Because, one, I suck at them. But, two, this doesn't... I can't track what's happening.
Hmm.
They make one random gesture and then just... balls of light shoot at the enemy. I'm like, how do you track that in a fighter game? Like, how do you keep up with that?
Well,
like,
I mean, you're seeing that there's a bar at the bottom, very standard stuff for a 2D fighter. And you're probably watching them use a lot of, like, power move, like, multiple bar moves that are going to be flashy and take up this screen. Don't worry, there's probably going to be a lot of zoning and grappling, all of the fun stuff you expect in a good 2D fighter.
Maybe some hard counters.
Yeah.
Air combos.
Yeah. Yeah. Get cross-ups even.
Yeah.
Get some cross-ups.
Some rising uppercuts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Quarter circles. Half circles.
All of them. Yeah. So, I don't have any, you know.
I don't
know interest in this. Yeah. It's fine. It's cool that it's out there.
There's another boring RPG coming out on the 15th called The Cruel King and the Great Hero. I think this game looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to get it right away. It's going to go on the wish list because too many other games. But I really like the sort of sepia tone, hand-drawn art style to it. Kind of like almost sketchbook looking.
Yeah, it does look
interesting. This is one of those games where I know I will get it and I'll play for an afternoon and then I'll never touch it again.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to avoid touching it altogether.
and this one, I think it's more of a premium-priced eShop game, too.
This is coming to the Switch, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does look good. It looks creative. There's a lot going on. The one thing I don't like is when you're in battle, there's a couple of shots. Like, I like the art style of the stuff being in the foreground, and you're moving, like, the shadow of the trees and things like that. It's an interesting art style with that. And then when you go into combat... the screen, like, shrinks and you have this border around it.
Hmm.
And I don't like that. Like, that's just... I think I have to squint. Like,
I think it's trying to be, like, evocative of a Super Nintendo or even, like, a Game Boy RPG where you have the border sort of, like, framing things so that... I'm not exactly sure why they did it, but it was, like, to preserve... like the pixel models of the characters as opposed to having to, like, resize them. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it can be distracting. Yeah. It usually doesn't bother me, but, you know, it is something that changes. Mm-hmm. So I can see why it would be distracting.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot of these look like Pokemon. Like, your pet is a Zigzagoon.
Yeah.
This ghost monster.
I had the same thought, too.
Looks like a Hoopa, you know?
I mean, I think that the Pokemon company should be totally down to do that. Like, if somebody's making an RPG and is like, hey, we want to use Zigzagoon and we want to use fucking Sligoo. As characters in the game, can we do that? Like, yes, do it, definitely.
Take it.
Yeah. Every RPG should have Pokemon as monsters.
Give us 50 million. Done. Yeah. You can have Zigzagoon.
There's like tiers to like, you get like the top tier if you pay top dollar, but if you want to use fucking Nickit, you could just have them.
But do. $10. Take it.
Do we need to talk about Persona 4 Arena Ultimax? Do we have anything to say about...
suggestive themes and use of tobacco.
Oh, there's somebody smoking. Oh, I hope it's chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like Persona 4.
Does a fighting game?
This is a fighting game based on
straight up fighting.
The RPG. I think it'd been better if they just brought Persona 4 to the Switch, but you know, here we are. I think this was an arcade game to start out with, and it's being ported over.
I did think it was really cool when they got into certain things and it went to the smoke cloud with the cloud with a pow 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 jam out.
Oh, for the all out attack.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of that's pretty cool. Hmm. But yeah, it's a fighting game.
Okay, sure. I feel like we're not in our element when we're talking about fighting games.
I mean, you're in your element. We're not.
I mean, I like them, but even then, I feel like an idiot when I talk about them.
But Kirby and the Forgotten Land, rounding out the month on the 25th. Oh, you guys, I'm so excited. I'm surprised
this is coming out so soon. They announced it, and then, like, a week later, like, here it is. Like,
yeah.
I love it when they do that.
I think this one got announced, I think it was back in September. And yeah, here it is already. And fucking, like, Pokemon Gen 9 just got announced, and it's out at the end of the year. We got, like, 8 months before a brand
new Pokemon. Watch it be out in, like, June. Like, oh, it would be God. Something absurd. Just okay. Get ready.
Under promise, over deliver.
Hey, you know what? I think I'd be okay with June rather than end of the year if Breath of the Wild 2 is still a thing.
They're just going to slam it down.
Mm. But Kirby looks so fucking good. I'm so excited for this one. Co-op, Ripley likes Kirby. I showed her a trailer already. We're going to play the whole thing in co-op. It's going to be great.
Yeah,
I'll borrow from you when Ripley's bored of it.
You know,
probably will be never.
These little foxes are adorable. I'm still not convinced Kirby's the good guy.
He almost certainly isn't. Like, yeah. He shows up in a strange place, and like Waddle Dees, who were typically enemies, he's helping them rebuild a town. Yeah. Like, they're probably an invading force that he is aiding against these foxes.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, the lore.
Mm.
This does look really good, though. Like, I'm never really excited about a Kirby game. But this legitimately looks good.
Because it's ambitious. Like, it's actually... Yeah.
It looks like Mario Odyssey meets Kirby.
Yeah. So, you know, typically over the past couple of decades, Kirby
really what happened is they had this thing skinned for Mario, and they're like, we can't have Mario eat a car.
Not with that attitude. Yeah. Well, no, it's just like the capture mechanic. It would just be like throwing Cappy at something again. Like, throw Cappy at the car, throw Cappy at the vending machine, throw Cappy at the road cone to pierce things. That's not what road cones do. Neither here nor there. Over the past couple decades, Kirby has been like in very safe but very good like 2D side-scrolling games, and I've liked all of them. But you know, this is doing something different and actually trying to expand the scope and try to, you know, have more mechanics and an upgrade mechanic and, you know, swallow the car mechanic. The moment
you saw there was going to be town building, you're like,
oh my God, yes. Like, oh, I'm going to upgrade this movie theater. We're going to show NC-17 movies only. But yeah, I'm pumped. It's going to be real good.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, two movies that we're done here.
Oh, thank God.
The Batman
nice.
Is out on the 4th.
I am torn with this because it does look good, but at the same time, I have issues with it. Like, the Riddler seems too serious. Like, calm down. Like,
it is another, like, serious take on a Batman movie.
Yeah, it's very, very serious. It's also, like, 3 hours long.
Oh my God, really?
It's a really fucking long movie.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. And do we need another Batman already?
I mean, I'm fine with it. Yeah. I don't mind that a Batman movie exists. I think to your point, like they do tend to be very serious. But like, if the other option is like Batman and Robin again, like nah, I'll take the serious one, thanks.
I'd just rather not.
I think
have another Batman. Like they have so many characters with DC that they can do. They just let's just beat Batman to death.
So have they
like said, his parents?
Have they said who the Riddler is?
I don't know.
No, they did show him in a trailer, which...
I mean, you see him in the trailer, and you hear his voice, and it's a very recognizable voice.
Riddler's always, like, a...
Low-key, you know who I want to play him?
No.
Jim Carrey. I want Jim Carrey to get crack at this.
I would love to see it. I would... Oh, my God.
I think that they've cast these villains very well in the past, and they've just been given such garbage to work with.
Yeah,
like Tommy Lee Jones makes pretty good Two-Face.
Yeah.
But would make it one if he had a better movie to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was, like, some drama around Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey in Batman Forever because...
they didn't get along or something?
They didn't get along, and I think Tommy Lee Jones didn't like that he was kind of, like, relegated to a sidekick role.
Oh, yeah.
In that one. But The Batman.
Yes. With Robert Pattinson. I mean, Robert Pattinson's going to be Batman.
Paul Dano is the Riddler.
No way. Okay, I'm excited. Who's
Paul Dano?
There Will Be Blood. Yeah. The kid in There Will Be Blood. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, Wes.
Never seen their movie before.
Why would they come out as other
movies? 2006 is going to be such a great retro show for you then. Oh my God, 2006 is an amazing year.
Yeah, it is.
There will be
five out for 5 years out from that.
No Country for Old Men, Children of Men, secretly the best movie.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen those.
Oh my God, so good.
You never seen Children of Men?
No.
Oh man, that's
amazing. Never seen Children of Men or No Country? No.
What an amazing movie.
I would say Children of Men before either. You'd probably enjoy that one the most.
Yeah. I think I would enjoy Children of Men.
More like
you know what long takes are? You know what long takes are in movies when there's not a lot of cuts.
Oh.
When it's like one shot takes place. They do it a couple of times in that movie, and it's unreal all that happens in the course of one individual shot. You know,
because like, we're taken where he's going over the fence, that takes 15 shots.
Oh, yeah. It's constantly brought up as bad editing in action movies that they have to do a lot of cuts to film a fight scene when really you could just put a stationary camera and have two guys go at it, and that's a better fight.
It ends up being disorienting when like there's a bunch of cuts over each other because you lose track of what's happening.
Mm. So, and it's done with the purpose of sort of putting you into the scene, kind of getting you into the movie. Children of Men is fucking nuts. It's a cool sci-fi movie. So I would say check that out.
Definitely. And maybe The Batman. I mean, I'm down to see it.
Oh, yeah. Back to base here.
I'm going to see it. But
he's going to say, like, it's holding you hostage.
I'm like,
I got the Regal Pass. It's a free movie. Of course I'm seeing it.
Yeah. It's like 3 fucking hours. You're like, God.
What are you... Well, bring some of the models with you. Some of your little models.
Some of my little models.
Just be there in the theater, like, well, like, position your phone flashlight so you can see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And just piss the shit out of everyone.
Well, see who Alfred is as well? It's going to be Andy Serkis.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, not a...
Playing himself.
CG character, just literally being himself, so I'm excited for that.
Being a human fucking being.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Andy Serkis? Gollum.
Oh.
Paul Dano. He portrays Paul Dano.
He's also Caesar in the new Planet of the Apes movies. Yeah. And what he looks like as a human being. You remember like the first half of Black Panther where there was that white guy arms dealer who was trying to get into Wakanda?
Oh, you mean the claw? The one
the
guy?
The claw, yeah. Yes, with the Mega Man arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, that's him. Yeah. Oh.
He played the arm.
He played the arm.
Yeah. So there's going to be a setup with Catwoman, I guess. So.
Yes.
That'll be cool. I mean, I like these Batman movies. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Then the only other one I have. Like, I don't know if you guys want to bring up
this
any other movies.
This looks like a trip. It's the one that you put on the trailer. This looks...
Yeah, Everything Everywhere at Once.
I'm really excited for this
one. I think it looks good.
I don't know. I feel like I need to do mental exercises before going to this movie.
Maybe do some like Sudoku puzzles or something.
Like I don't know. I feel like I'm just gonna. I feel like my brain's gonna be bleeding out of my ears by the end of it. Just.
I mean, it's got tons of different visual styles because it is a person who is like hopping between dimensions or realities in order to. I don't even know what the main goal is. Like, there's something that she has to do that's going to save everything. Don't know what it is, but like it's so visually eclectic that it looks super interesting to me. And it has like a sort of almost like a Being John Malkovich energy to it, where there's like not only like an overt surrealism to all the different visual styles, but also like a surreal tone to it. But yeah,
it looks. Just looks really interesting. I'm not really sure how to phrase it, but it just seems like there's going to be a lot of just like weird editing, a lot of like kind of mind shattering events are going to occur. It's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be fun. Yeah.
Any other movies that we need to bring up for March?
There's one right now in the theater. It's called The Cursed. I want to see. It looks like it's like a low budget gruesome horror film about like. Something about witches and people in town that believe in God not being happy about there being witches. Looks cool.
I don't know that one.
I see that. It's circulating through the theaters right now. In a few weeks, this one, it could be terrible, but it also kind of sneakily looks fun. It's called The Lost City. It's got...
Is that the one with the...
I think we saw a trailer for it at the movie when we went to see it. It's the one with... why can't I think of her name? From Speed.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock and like...
She writes like romance books. And it turns out that one of the romance books she wrote somehow is actually based on a real like buried treasure thing.
Hmm.
And the actor that portrays the cover model is like trying to rescue her as she gets sucked into this thing to go find it.
Okay.
Who else? It's Sandra Bullock and...
Like Channing Tatum, isn't it?
Channing Tatum. Also Bradley Pitt. So he's going to be in it too. He's like the actual guy that's sent to rescue her that's, you know, not a model. Oh, and Daniel Radcliffe is like the bad guy.
Okay.
I don't know. It looks fun. It looks like it's going to be fun enough. So I'm interested to see. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be like particularly graphic. It's only got like a PG-13 rating. Yeah, so
Sandra Bullock's really in anything nowadays.
I mean, if they went like...
much. She did, what, the bird whatever?
Oh, yeah, the Bird Box or something. The Netflix something
like
one.
That. Yeah. I'm like, that was like it. Like, I haven't seen her do anything in years.
What does she need to do? She's still getting that cruise control money.
I know, right?
Well, keep in mind, she, in the same year, won an Oscar and a Razzie. And accepted both.
As she should. Right. That is a stand-up thing to do.
She brought her Oscar to her Razzie acceptance.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
What were the movies?
She's a baller.
Blindside.
Blindside. I don't even remember what the one that she was being made fun of for.
That's kind of the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why you bring the Oscar. Like, no one's going to remember this shit. Everyone's going to remember this one.
Yeah. I think only three people have ever in person accepted their Razzies. Mm. And I think one was like U Bull, that weirdo European director that makes shit films.
Mm-hmm. House of the Dead.
Yeah.
Blood Rain, I think. A lot of video game movies, sadly. That's why they have a bad reputation, because of that fucking guy.
U-Bowl. Made Postal, too. Yeah. So, I'm excited for that. I feel like there's other movies. The trailer's just not coming to my mind right now, but, you know, yeah, there's going to be some good stuff coming down the pipes.
Cool. All right, let's get Wes out of here. Mm-hmm. Next up is the Pokemon show. We're going to talk about all of the happenings with Pokemon.
Oh, that's going to be a good show.
Gen 9. Arceus.
There's so much shit going on.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Yep.
Have you played it since? Because that shit's live already.
Yeah. I have played Arceus, and I downloaded the update, but I haven't indulged in any of the content yet.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, all right. I'll ask Galfair, because we all dip into Pokemon stuff.
Okay. So, Pokemon show, and then we'll do like a mini show and a retro show and all that, and that's it, the end.
So long.
Hasta luego.